Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Spectrum. Steve Warren here. Once again, we have some authors. We have co-authors of a book called China's Super Consumers. And my guests are going to introduce themselves and say a little bit about themselves. First of all, Savio, you're first.
I'm Savio Chen. I come from Hong Kong 28 years ago and started a few businesses right now. And then now just starting this book with Michael Sokol, my co-author, and just came out about 3 weeks ago.
And Michael?
My name is Michael Zakor. I grew up in New York City and went to China 13 years ago. And, you know, I think the partnership dynamic we have here is a professional who grew up in Hong Kong and came to an America, and an American who grew up here and went over to China. And between us, we have a little over 40 years of experience in the China business world and working with brands and corporations and companies on their China strategies.
So you guys passed crossing the Pacific on a handful of occasions, probably, one going one way, one going the other. You've got together and you've written this book, co-written the book, called China's Super Consumers. Give me a little bit of the backstory on how the book came about and who's it for.
Well, we've been doing business to help corporations to help to understand China for many, many years. And one thing that frustrated us, you know, is we found out how many misinformations are out there and their lack of understanding about Chinese culture and Chinese, you know, business and Chinese, you know, people and consumers. And so we, of course, we're going to help them one at a time, obviously, become to consult with them, help them. But for many of the people who doesn't have the luxury of hiring myself or Michael, and would like to use a book to tell them the story about how to better understand Chinese consumers.
Yeah, and when Wiley asked us to write a book about China, we really sat down and thought long and hard about, well, what is the most important story coming out of China today? And it didn't take us long to conclude that the power, the impact, the growth, and the global changes being wrought by the Chinese consumer is the biggest story, not only in China today, but one of the biggest stories in the global business arena. Really, it hasn't been since the age of the baby boomers in the post-war period when the first super consumers were born, the American super consumers. They changed the world. They changed America, and we see Chinese consumers as the second wave of super consumers who, much in the same way, are changing China, changing the world, and changing the way we do business.
From the perspective that I have from interviewing a lot of Chinese targeted business opportunities, there tends to be a heavy emphasis on the business side of things, and I was refreshed to see your book deals on the consumer side of things. There's everyone thinking about the people in the corner offices that want to come and bring their millions of dollars to the United States and invest here, just like there are American corporations that want to go to China and set up shop there. But the end product, the end user, is what you guys are talking about, and those are the ones who are ultimately going to drive the dollar signs on both sides. Tell me why you decided to take that angle.
Well, I think that, you know, in America, it's B2B is the main driver, business-to-business driver, drive the economy, the business. But in China, as a book will tell you, that it's a consumer-driven society. So it's the first time ever that a major consumer class is driving the whole economy. And that's why, and most people did not pay attention to that. They saw this story about, oh, China is the factory of the world. They make the iPod, their iPhone, the anything, the computer, the anything that we buy from Walmart. But they don't understand that the consumers is really the one who's going to change the world in terms of the size and the impact. Especially when you have, you know, 10-15 million middle class people moving into the city every month in China. In about 10 years time, it'll be over 100 million people just moving into the city. And that will create more jobs, higher income per jobs, and they all get paid nicely, and they have one-child policy. So all this confluence of all these factors, you know, really form a tidal wave of consumerisms, of spending that hit us. And I think that me and Michael Soto explained that from the history point of view and how different companies, how China can understand that better, and how they try to attack and make the best of this, you know, phenomenon.
For many, many years, for decades, maybe for centuries, probably for centuries, the Chinese consumer has been a saver. It's been a saving environment. And now they're switching to a spending environment. Has that been an easy transition to finally let go of some of the income that's coming in the front door?
Yeah, I think really it's a generational shift. If you look at the demographics, you'll see that the 70-year-olds, the 60-year-olds, the 50-year-olds are still, and the 50, they're becoming a border area, but they're still savers. And understandably so, you know, for the major part of Chinese history, the average person didn't have a lot. They had to depend on themselves for food, shelter, medical care, education. There was a lot of feast and famine, good times, bad times. And so being thrifty was not only a Confucian virtue, but it was a matter of survival. As China has grown wealthier over the last 30 years, you've seen the pocketbooks open up. And nowhere is this more apparent with the kids who were born after 1980. So they call it the 80s generation, the 90s generation, where traditional Chinese saving rates are about 35 to 40% of income. In the 20 and 30-year-old demographics, you have it as low as 10%, 5%, and for certain demographics, 0%. There's actually a phenomenon where some youths in China are spending 150% of their income on consumer goods. And this is a result of what we call the six-pocket syndrome. Generally speaking, you have one child, two parents, and four grandparents who are all focused on the well-being and material comfort of this one child. And so, you know, somebody in their 20s could live at home, spend all their income on consumer goods, and have money from mom, dad, grandma, and grandpa twice over to spend as well. One thing I just want to come back to your previous question, because it's a good one, Steve. The feedback we've getting on the book has been exactly what we hoped for, especially in light of the fact that the first half of the book, we talk about Chinese history, culture, language, and philosophy. So we're halfway into the book before we even start talking about business, brands, retailers, entrepreneurs, and how they're succeeding in China. The biggest mistake that we see companies from around the world making in China is skipping the history, language, culture, and philosophy part of their exploration and strategy setting and moving directly to this old idea of if we present it, they will come.
The United States, all 50 of the United States, each state has its own development, business development council. Many of them send representatives to China to pitch, if you're going to come to the United States, come to Alabama, come to Georgia, come to Michigan, come to Illinois, come to New York, whatever. Likewise, in China, which is an even huger geographical area, the many districts and many regions of China are now trying to get the attention. If you're going to come to China, set up shop here, set up shop there. All districts are not created equal in the United States as well as in China. Are there areas throughout the whole of China where there are vast differences in the Chinese consumer, just like there are in this country?
Well, just like America, I think that China is so diverse and so huge, right? So obviously, they have different behaviors in different areas of the people. If you're living in Wuhan, the inland, or Chongqing, you're very different than people who live in the coastal area, the first tier cities, right? The Suzhou, Shanghai, and Beijing. So I think that, you know, obviously people have the income level are lower in the inland, or if you're up, you know, up north and up east, up, near Heilongjiang province, near Russia, the income level is lower. But Chinese young people, just like Michael said earlier, has been now fueled by that confidence factor. Now that they saw Alibaba win IPO, the number one IPO in the world, and they saw that Jack Ma become the richest man in the world, in China at least, and being the top 20 in the world, they're seeing their own version of China dream coming true, just like our American dream, you know, many, many years that we have here. So you'll be surprised that even people who doesn't make a lot of money per se, but they know they're going to get 10-12% salary increase every year. They know they will have a job because they can move to the city and get a better job. So And they know that, just like Michael said earlier, they have their grandparents, their parents helping them to finance their educations and all their tools they want, toys they want to buy, their iPod, iPhone, and computers. They are much more poised to spend more than the previous generations. So even though they may only make $1,000, $2,000 a month compared to our income, which is a lot lower, but they were willing to spend more of their portion of the income compared to their parents, or for sure, again, the grandparents.
Does the flow of information about what's going on in the world economy flow easily into the Chinese consumer's consciousness, or is it filtered?
No, in terms of the information that's coming into China, you know, if it's looked at from the perspective of finance, consumption, brands, pop culture, there's really an unfiltered inflow of information into China. But one of the, you know, really big discoveries and big ideas that we explore in the book is that there's an outflow now. And so in the old days, we used to think of China as the China market, which isn't really true. There are probably 22 to 25 distinct markets within China. But now we see what we call the China global demographic. This is a contingent of 100 million Chinese plus who are traveling the world, who are shopping the world, who are experiencing luxury the world over. You have 250,000 Chinese students studying in the U.S. every year. That's the largest number of any foreign student contingent. Another 150,000 studying in Europe. And so what's happening through investments in real estate, investments in business, travel for business and pleasure, you have a global savvy consumer demographic in China that's not only waiting for stuff to flow into them, but they're going out to the world and taking it back.
My guests are the authors of China's Super Consumers, and it's a great book. It's an easy read, I want to say. It's not War and Peace. It's thin, and you get right to the point. I appreciated that you mentioned about the fact you set everybody up with the discussion of language and culture and all of that. Is that still an intimidating factor in people wanting to reach out to China to do business there? I know there are a lot of business initiatives like Think Asia, Think Hong Kong, which is a big initiative going on right now. Is it still tough to get over that that cultural language issue?
Well, I think it's the fear of it's the lack of knowledge, right? And that's why we spend so much time and content to educate the culture, history, and the languages. I think it's critically important that they understand that part before they get to the other part of the side of the business. We Americans being so linear thinking, we want to get to from point A to point D, B in the shortest time possible, whereas Chinese are very holistic. We go around in a circle. And so I think that a lot of times that if you're just too linear, just trying to get to point B too quickly, you skip over the most important stuff sometimes. When you go to point B, you find there's nothing there. And that's one of the frustrations of trying, me and Michael, trying to help educate. Say, take two steps back, really understand. It's critical that you understand the culture and history if you want to be successful and have the right picture of China's all about.
Mm. Let me ask you, go ahead.
Just to add to that, you know, I work with clients as big as the Fortune 200, but I also work with small and medium-sized enterprises, private, public. The clients that I encounter who are intimidated and afraid of China in terms of the language, the culture, the history, the competitiveness of the market, the size of the market, those are the smart guys. It's the people and the businesses who are not intimidated and have no fear of what they'll be facing in China are the ones who usually fail. That lack of appreciation of how long it will take, how different it is from the way they do business here, not keeping an open mind. So a healthy fear is a good thing when going into China.
In the remaining few minutes here, I wanted to bring up the subject of luxury goods, which is always a topic of conversation because Chinese consumers, particularly coming into the United States, the perception is have a pocket load of money and they're going back with a suitcase full of American purchased luxury items. However, understanding now that a number of Chinese companies are developing luxury goods on their own, but when you see luxury brands that are names like Gucci or Ferragamo or what have you, those are families, and those families have taken generations to build those names. Are there generational families building luxury goods in China, or is it all from the manufacturer business side? And will China be able to replicate its own luxury brands at some point in the future? I see one head shaking and one nodding.
Well, I think that, you know, you hit it right on the head. I think that, you know, the key is, you know, luxury goods, the reason why Chinese love the luxury goods is because they have the heritage and the history of the brand that are many, many years of the make in the making, right? You know, the Great Wall was not built in one day, right? Just like Rome. So I think that, you know, for Chinese companies to build their own brand, they are now in the first, second generation of building brand. So they are just still learning that learning mode. But where they cannot buy them, they acquire them. You know, they cannot build them, they try to buy them. So you will see when they buy them, they try to also learn from them. So that has been a parallel track as to they want to learn from the best luxury brands in the world and partner with them in China, and also to build their own over time. They also know that they can build over time in a short period of time, and it takes a long time to build a real brand.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned the perception of Chinese travelers coming with empty suitcases and spending a lot of money. That's not just a perception. That's a reality. 100 million plus Chinese business and pleasure travelers went outside the mainland in 2014, which, by the way, is the highest number of travelers in the world from a single country. But more importantly, they spend almost $8,000 per capita per trip when they do go out. That makes them number one in the world per capita per spend. To put it in perspective, the average American spends about $2,500 per capita per trip. So they are still coming out. They're buying a lot of luxury goods. The changes that we're seeing are twofold. They're spending more on experiential luxury. So it's not just about the physical product. It's now staying in the best hotels, eating at the best restaurants, getting courtside seats at a Knicks game, going to Broadway shows, going on a hunting trip in Alaska. So we're seeing experiential spend increase. And we're also seeing a move towards more American, what we call casual or affordable luxury brands. So there's still a huge market for the old European stalwarts like LV and Ferragamo and Prada. But increasingly, you're seeing that spend go to companies like Coach and Michael Kors and Apple.
You've been on the book tour talking to a lot of people. How's it been going? How have your words fallen on the ears of the American people that you're talking to about this subject?
I think they're quite open to it. I mean, they really appreciate the tone and the history explanations of the culture. So after they read the book, they say, "Oh, now I get it, understand it better," and which is our goal. We want them to understand it better so that they can feel more comfortable to deal with China consumers and be served, to serve them better.
And how many places have you been on this book tour? Where have you? What's your cycle?
I think we have another 13 ahead of us in the next 3 or 4 weeks. So 20 stops as of now, although the way things are developing, new dates are being added as we go. We'll be in Chicago on October 22nd at the Mid-America Club for an author talk and cocktail party. And Vizio, the huge TV manufacturer, is hosting us at their headquarters in Irvine, California on October 23rd. And we welcome everybody listening in Chicago and L.A. to come and see us those nights.
I want to thank you for coming. And in closing, give us each of your take on where we're going to be with this business relationship between the U.S. and China in the next year or two, and perhaps into the next American election cycle.
Well, I think that the biggest thing, I think I would suggest the government leaders of our country and the business leaders of the country is to have a very open mind and don't look at China and China consumers as a threat to our economy. They are our friends. And in fact, I would suggest that they are even our best friends. They're one of the major components that can help us create more jobs, you know, create more commerce in this country, and also help us to sell into their country using e-commerce and other factors. So by being there, the best friends forever, what we call the BFF, will be the first, you know, things you will have to want to keep in mind. And then after that, study the language, you know, and the culture and the history, and then the door's going to wide open for us.
Yeah, I mean, for the foreseeable future, in my opinion, far into the future of this century, the Chinese-American relationship is going to be the most important in the world. From an economic point of view, a cultural point of view, a political point of view, you know, this is going to be a bipolar world that we live in now. You know, it's been my experience over the last 22 years in business that nothing creates bridges and ties and understanding better than good business. And, you know, we go back to the old saying, the business of America is business. And I think now you're seeing that in China. The business of China is business. And so these economic ties are paramount. And, you know, in closing, that the Chinese consumer, and what we say in the book is, for the first time in history, there are legitimately 1 billion customers in China. Even 10 years ago, you were talking about a market of really 200 million that had disposable income. Everybody has disposable income in China now. And so it's important for American companies and global companies to understand this global demographic that China's become.
If people want more information about the book or they want to kick the tires on the subjects that you cover, where can they go?
Sure, they can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, put in China Super Consumers, or they can go to our website, www.ChinaSuperConsumers.com.
Thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate it very much. I hope our paths will cross again. I guess you had hinted momentarily that another book is on the horizon.
We're probably going to start as soon as we get through the book tour for this one.
Okay.
So we'll keep an eye for that.
Listen again next Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern for another edition of Spectrum. To hear previously broadcast editions of Spectrum, visit the Spectrum tab on our website to listen or download your favorite past programs. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Spectrum. Now, back to the music on China America Radio.